Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Supercar Cast. My name is Oliver, and joining me are my fellow co-hosts, Nick, Drew, and Andre. You guys want to say hi?
Hey, everybody.
Howdy. Hello.
All right. What a way to start. Man, it's been a while since we recorded. We were kind of on a roll there for a while. We were doing consistent episodes, and then I feel like everyone got busy. Life got in the way. Some things happened. So, but the good news is, whenever we take a break, we have a lot of updates, a lot of things to go over. A lot of news on projects, so I feel like this should be a pretty interesting episode. Things have gone. I don't think anything. Is this the first episode where no one's bought anything new?
I tried. Yeah. Shit, I tried a lot.
We broke the streak.
That sucks, but yeah. So nothing was purchased, but things were definitely sold. So if we're talking about things still coming and going, at least we keep that streak going.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, so how is everyone? You guys doing okay?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, hanging in there? You guys want to go through some project updates? You know, run it like usual? Okay. Who should start? Who wants to go first?
I have the least amount of items, so I'll roll through really quickly.
All right, let's
debatable.
I was going to say very debatable.
Well, I have a shit ton, so...
Good. We'll just run through us real quick and then you can take it.
Cool.
Updates. Oliver helped me test fit wheels today. They went on the car. They look good. Then we put the car back on the ground and I mended the Forerunner, kind of, not really. Power steering pump went to go out, air bubble got in it. I just kept adding fluid and then destroyed my driveway, turning the wheels left and right. That's about it.
Cool.
that we've got cool. going on, but yeah, that's project updates for you. Don't have a whole lot outside of that going on in my realm today. Still buying parts from Japan, still hoarding things. That is roughly about it, I think.
Well, I was gonna say this a little bit more. I mean, like, you literally just said you bought some stuff from Japan. Like, you've been scoring some interesting stuff, even if it's, you know, well, I don't know, I think those visors are cool.
Yeah, no, I was pretty stoked about finding the factory Nissan side visors, and then I found a random Japanese page where somebody had them on, so they're very subtle. Those are going to arrive by Friday, which is cool. Other than that, just still trying to hunt for some specific parts. Some gaskets would be pretty clutch, and then outside of that, I guess, in the parts realm or parts world, I bought a 3D printer, which should be arriving in a few weeks. To start being able to mock up, test fit, fabricate some parts so then we can get them out to machine shops and get stuff built. So,
well, that's pretty substantial.
Yeah.
Are you going to be CNCing or not CNCing? Are you going to be doing the CAD work yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the CAD work myself. So spend some time this weekend learning through some of the different kind of processes for CAD, or if you're using sculpting software, specifically what you're looking for. To start delving into that world with... some hyperfixation on how I go ahead and learn things quickly enough.
I would absolutely love it if somebody happened to figure out how to make a mirror mount for a 1968 Porsche 912.
Sounds
crazy if you knew someone who could do that.
It's wild that somebody might be able to go ahead and do that, come up here. No, it's I'm definitely interested in giving it a go. So that is going to, I guess, my other project update is going to allow a lot of things to be redone per se that I want to do. So I'll fabricate out, mock what I want to get done, print in a few specific materials to begin with, knowing that, like, for that mounting bracket, if it needs to be machined out, you can send those files outward to machining, or you can actually even take your files and send them out to people on the interwebs. I just sounded like a total boomer a moment, and they'll go ahead and get it taken care of for you as well.
I know. Related, but if you want to watch an awesome YouTube series, and the guy goes through how he CAD everything, and he works mainly, his medium is wood and plastic bits, but Wintergarden, wherever you want to call it, dude, fantastic French guy making a marbled machine.
Heck yeah, I'll give it a watch.
You learn a ton from it too, so I'm excited to see what you do with it, because you really don't, you know, have to do anything.
I kind of go full freight in for phases at a time. So we'll go ahead and see what we can do with that. But those are the project updates. We'll be making some things. I've got a very specific model I need to learn some 3D modeling for Andre. I'll be working up on. That is all of my updates that I've got going on.
Nice. No, I think the 3D printing is going to be pretty cool too. Actually, I have a file I need to get from a friend of mine for my rotors. Yeah.
I was going to say for the rotors.
Yeah, because that redrill, the paper template doesn't hold up to like multiple redrills. So next time I go to do rotors, having that 3D printed, like just spacer essentially that sits, you know, I have a dowel and it sits in the right place and then you can just mark and redrill the right spots. That'd be super nice to just permanently have that in my toolbox. So I'll get the file from him, and then if we can do that as like an early test, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, we can definitely do that for giggles out there. I searched some different things. There's whole web pages where people just post up their stuff and you can buy them a coffee or tip them if you want. E36s have a lot of things. I found as well, as I mentioned to you, lots of door card things were actually associated on the 3D printing world.
not at all surprising.
Strange. I wanted to see if there was a glove box one too, but I didn't go that far into it. Yeah. But it's but yeah, no, I'm excited for it. So we'll see when it comes in. It's coming from the Europe. I forget what part. So I gotta go ahead and it said 2 to 3 weeks, but it was bumped up from 8 to 12 weeks. So we'll take the improvement timetable.
Hey, if you could figure out the glove box thing, you might be able to finance your whole 3D printer by that project.
No.
You might be able to finance your whole house by that project.
There's a guy, he has a write-up on how to fix the glove box sag for free with like no parts or anything. It turns out really it's just a order of operations thing that causes most of them to sag. But
don't open it, or what's the order of operations?
No, just when you do the cabin air filter, I guess, like when you go to put everything back in, there's a way to like tighten it to sink it back in. He has a write-up online, so granted they're fragile, but yeah.
My favorite
step
part
one, don't buy a BMW. Step right, two, yeah, gun.
Sure. Okay.
Step two, if you have a BMW, sell it.
Keep in mind.
I remember the first time I got in Oliver's M3, I'm like looking at everything, I'm filling around, and I reach for a glove box. He's like, I open it. He's like, oh no. I'm like, what just happened? He's like, you're not supposed to open up the glove boxes in these. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. I just like slowly closed it and it was fine. I'm like, I guess I won't do that again.
Yeah. Mine specifically, when I got it for whatever reason, had a issue where if you opened it, it didn't like to go back closed. Nick did the same thing.
I did the same thing. Like I legitimately right when he bought it, I opened it and I was like, I am so sorry. So that's like I learned about that, and I learned a mod like locking himself in the back.
It did that actually.
It
once.
Fixed itself, right?
Yeah, it did that once. No idea what caused it too. This last weekend, for whatever reason, that same door, just for like 2 minutes, decided not unlocking, not opening, and then it was fine. So
it liked it. So yeah, it should be good. Good projects abound, but nothing else too crazy over here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the 3D printer. That's gonna be rad. We'll bootleg entire cars. We're gonna make an F40 out of 3D printing.
I need to get a smoke detector though. If you've ever seen a 3D printer catch fire, that's terrifying looking. So that happens. Should not with this model accordingly, but I've been on Reddit a lot, and if you see a 3D printer fail to the point of fire, that's a whole separate.
I doubt it's that common. It can't be.
The hot end gets to very, very hot. So
yeah, it'll be fine.
It's normally only on Kickstarter printers that they have the failures.
Gotcha. So yeah, you'll be fine.
But that's my updates. What about your updates, Andre?
I sold the Lexus.
Damn, that's it. A pretty substantial update, because also I don't think you got it back last episode. It had just been wrecked.
Oh yeah, it had just was getting ready to go to the body shop on that Monday.
Oh really? Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
It's been a while.
It got fixed. I drove it for, I don't know, like 3-4 weeks, something like that, and then sold it in a day, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was fast.
That's super fast.
How'd you like it compared to the Jetta?
How do I answer that?
That's a great question, man.
I liked it a lot more.
Like, why didn't you sell the Jetta?
Well, because he doesn't own the Jetta.
I know.
Well, he doesn't wait, which Jetta?
Yo, first of all, which Jetta? Second of all, I liked it more than both of them. But also, I really enjoy driving a new car. I never thought I would, but like a new car with modern new features, mm-hmm. I really like it. It's super nice.
Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, really it's just going to be your daily. That makes a ton of sense to just have the nicer, newer thing. Yeah.
And Smash Mouth has manual, right?
Yeah. Manual. It's some kind of engaging.
Is it?
Well, I mean, more so than that car in automatic, yes.
I think you really say that about any car.
Yes. No.
I agree.
I know what Drew's getting at, and no.
I agree.
No, I'm not going to agree with that.
Wait, is that...
More is engaging? This, but literally, by definition, it would be more engaging.
Is this now, the flippy hand paddle thingy again all over? Is that what we're getting into?
I'm going to go on record, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but Drew's just wrong, and I have reasons why he's wrong. But, yeah, okay, fine. Engaging isn't literally you're doing more things.
Wrong.
Yes, you are literally doing more things, but no, manual is not always better. And I stand by that.
No, he said more engaging.
That's fine. Yes, you are literally doing more things.
And it's more engaging.
I guess I'll save my counterpoint until we argue about this later.
Yeah.
As far as my updates.
That's all your updates? Ain't nothing with old Jetta?
I haven't driven it since I took it to Nick's. And then I haven't driven.
No, wait, that can't be right because you definitely took it into your work. You sent me photos.
Oh, I guess that's true. So I drove it the one day after I took it to Nick's.
So that's like an ongoing tradition with that car. The first owner didn't drive it. Second owner didn't drive it. Now you're just keeping it going.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to break tradition for the car. I didn't want it to feel out of place. It
turns out that specific shade of brown, for whatever reason, like repulses people subconsciously.
It's everyone's like, oh my God, I love that. I want to buy it. And then the longer they have it, they're like, ugh.
But they don't know why. It's just the color resonates. Yeah. Like it releases specific chemicals in your brain that makes you not want to go near it. So you avoid driving it. And that's how it only ended up with 41,000 miles.
So at this point, Andre, you have to refer to yourself now as a connoisseur.
Collector.
You said hoarder incorrectly.
No, I think the three of us qualify more for that than you. But
a curator. Even
yes, a curator of Jettas.
I've had just as many Jettas as I have Lexis in my life, and I don't know how to feel about that.
Is it the plural, like, you know how Prius did a vote years ago, like 10 years ago, to determine the plural, and it came out to Prii, so Lexis is Lexi.
I, you know,
just all Toyotas are I ending.
Yeah, yeah. Camry.
Toyotas.
This is the plural. But yeah, so I haven't done anything else except for sell the Lexus. That's it.
I mean, that's pretty significant. I genuinely thought you would never sell that car, and accident or no, I thought you were going to keep it. So,
ditto.
It's kind of surprising.
You know, kind of like with the Volvo, it kind of. Like the accident kind of killed it for me.
Really?
So what you're saying is that accidents ruin cars.
Wow. Yeah, it's novel concept, I know.
The concepts that we come up with on this podcast.
It's just
breaking some ground.
Unbreakable.
Breaking news.
Yeah. I don't know. I still enjoy driving it. Because I drove it for like 3 weeks to work. Until I stopped being lazy and actually posted it for sale. But like every now and then I'd be driving and think like, ugh, I'm going to have to like do work to this car at some point because it's old and it's been wrecked. I don't want to do that. And so I just like, I don't know, it just kind of died for me.
Before we get off the Lexus though, the repair, I saw it in person. It looked pretty good. Did they?
Yeah, it was surprisingly well done.
Like, you couldn't tell. I mean, I guess you show me one little, like, orange peel, wavy, whatever. But other than that,
you, you could tell if you knew what you were looking for. But for the most part, and I'm sure, like, a good, like, cut and buff, like, a proper one for the whole car would probably get rid of most of that.
Yeah.
But I was surprised. They did a really good job.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely didn't look like it was hit, so... Did the guy who buy it, not that I'm saying you would pull one over, but did you like say, oh yeah, I got repaired and stuff like that? Or like...
So, oh man, that was a... So as he was asking me questions, I was still waking up or what, because like I woke up to his messages wanting to meet in like an hour. And as we were talking... He asked me, like, is this the original paint? And just, like, without even thinking about it, I was like, I'm not sure, probably. Like, I did legitimately just didn't even think about it. And then, like, the more, like, we continued, like, talking, and, like, halfway through the conversation, he was trying to think of a question, and he was just standing there, and he goes, oh, man, I took too big of a dab before I came here. I'm trying to remember these questions I was trying to ask you, and I just can't remember. And so, like, you know, whatever that happens. And as he's leaving, he was like, okay, well, let me think about it. I'm going to take the VIN and go run a Carfax on it. And as soon as he said that, it clicked in my head, like, oh, I'm a fucking idiot. Why? Like, of course it's been hit. Of course the paint isn't original, you dummy. But it, like, at that point, it was too late to say anything. And I was just like, whatever, I'll just let it ride. And so, like, 4 hours go by and he messages me like nothing happened. Like, we didn't have a conversation. He's like, hey, so I ran the report and it says it was hit in like March. Do you have any pictures of that? and so I just sent him a couple pictures and he was like, oh wow, they did the repairs really well. Do you have the receipt? And I like showed him the receipt and like, I don't know if he was too high to remember that I told him it, you know, or what, but it's just like, kind of worked itself out.
you might be the shadiest used car salesman in the group now.
Hardly, because he didn't try to.
No, because I disclosed it. I gave him the receipt.
You were forcefully disclosed. That's original paint. We're good. I'm gonna go run a Carfax. Yeah, you do that, bud.
I don't even know. Like, it legitimately didn't even. Like, I didn't even pause to think about it. He was like, is this original paint? And I was like, I don't know, probably. And then we just, like, moved on to other things. And, oh, man. Yeah, well,
yeah, that probably would have scared him off if you're like, oh, wait, just, you know, 15 minutes ago, yeah, I got hit. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
the whole quarter is like, completely new.
Yeah, I'm going to just let it ride and see what happens. And it worked itself out.
Yeah, ever since I got hit, you know, my memory hasn't been the same.
Really rattled me up there,
man. That thing got like totaled, but the paint's probably fine.
It's original. They just buffed out the original paint and popped out the whole quarter.
You'd be surprised what they can buff out these days.
Like the same thing they do with heat with the dab, you know, it's magic.
if you ask, if you really press the issue, you'd be like, dude, have you not heard of paintless dent repair?
I thought about it afterwards, like as I was driving home, and I was like, well, if he's like, hey, why didn't you tell me it was a hit? I'd have been like, I don't know, you were high. You probably don't remember.
I mean, it worked out. I'm glad.
Yeah, it worked out. It's fine.
It's funny. Yeah. Cool. Well, congrats on selling it, and on to the next car? Question mark. Are we going to Florida next weekend?
No.
Are you buying another Jetta?
You're going to Florida this weekend.
Yeah. You can get some Primo Mark IVs in Jetta or in Florida. In Jetta, my bad.
No, we're gonna not buy anything right now.
I'm still gonna look and send you stuff.
The Jetta,
huh?
We're gonna VR6 swap the Jetta then.
I think we should.
No, we're not gonna do that either.
It's not moving anyways. What difference is it gonna be if you pull out the motor?
I don't.
Yeah, I got you there, huh?
Yeah, lawyers.
<You know? laughs> You know, I guess.
Let's rip out that whatever's in there. Let's go.
Swap to whatever.
I have no idea what's actually in that car.
Hey, it's a 1.8 liter something.
Is it?
Turbo? Yeah.
I only know because it's a bigger motor than Smash Mouth.
You should drag race them.
Well,
I'm sure it'll be about equal.
I mean, probably, honestly. They're both terribly slow.
All right, well, I'll keep pushing you to buy something that you don't need. I found a couple supercharged BMWs for sale, so
we'll perfect. Right up my alley.
No. Well, the GMW is for sale, too.
That's true. I found an LS Swap D36, so that's basically a Silverado with a roundel. So.
Yeah, let me just spend double what I spent on the 540.
This will probably be more reliable. Project. Yeah, it'll probably be more reliable.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Silverado's good to repair. 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard, but they're built like a rock.
Yeah. Silverado.
Cool, man. Well, congrats on selling the car. Time to either start a project or pick up another one. So, Drew, I guess that's your turn, man.
Oh,
you parted ways with something.
Yeah, I sold the 540. It went back to New York. In fact, the guy looked at the Carfax. He's like, this car was 2 miles from my house for 15 years. I'm like, wow, that's kind of interesting. But he absolutely loves it. And yeah.
So did he like just reach out to you like from Craigslist or something? Text you?
Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah. So he'd been looking for a while. He said he had a bunch of other deals kind of fall through. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, he asked for a bunch of pictures. And so I sent him a bunch of pictures. But I'm like, let's do like a virtual test drive because I don't want you to have any surprises. Like, they got too much going on. I don't need that kind of stress in my life to sell a car and have somebody be like, well, what the heck? I absolutely despise selling cars sight unseen. It really stresses me out. But
that's the best kind.
I know. It should be.
Hear from them again.
Yeah. But not,
as soon as they leave your zip code, that's it. They're dead to you.
Yeah, so we got on Messenger and did a whole video chat thing. I'm like, all right, so here's this issue. This window light clicks when it goes up, but it still goes up weirdly. You know, showed him, you know, like brakes are a little bit squashy, AC doesn't work. And he was like, yeah, this is perfect. I'll take it. I'm like, okay.
That's a pile.
No, that thing, yeah. No, actually, it's cool.
You're not selling it anymore. You can admit it.
No. You know, there was that nagging thought of what's going to blow up in it at any moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, while I drove it, it was good. It was really fun. So, yeah. So that's gone. So did
just like a truck show up, you dropped it off with the truck and you shipped it out to him, or did he come get it?
Yeah, I shipped it out. So, yeah, truck showed up and it was a 18-wheeler kind of trailer. And it was pretty impressive. The first, you know, it was supposed to be picked up on a Friday. Yeah, it was $1,300 to go back to New York. Which, in context, when I sold that 356 replica, and that also went to New York, that was a semi-enclosed trailer. This wasn't enclosed. And that was like $385, but, you know, 7 years difference. So, yeah, there was something I was going to say about that, but yeah. Oh, the first company said that they'd be here on Friday, and that was supposed to be 985, and their truck broke down, and the broker was like, well, you know, we can still get there today, but it's going to be another $400. And basically kept that up until the guy paid the extra $400 to have the truck come 4 days later to my house. But
that's shady.
Yeah, super shady.
Super shady.
But so that's taken care of.
Yeah.
As far as fun and exciting projects, I recharged the AC in the old Raptor.
All right.
So not a lot going on, huh?
You've done nothing on that? A little bit.
Done nothing on the 912?
I took the exhaust off and put the exhaust back on.
Last time we did an episode, it wasn't running.
Oh, really? Right?
I don't know.
Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
I feel like it's been running for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, haven't done an episode longer than that.
Well, hey, surprise, the 912 runs, guys. It's pretty sweet. None of the gauges work. I am ordering special parts. So it took 2 weeks from Pelican to get the oil temp gauge that got here is too small. So, or the oil temperature sender. And so I ordered an adapter. So that's in the mail right now.
Overhead parts.
It's Septicart. Yes. 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 It's surprisingly quick.
Yeah, I mean, remind people what you put in.
So long story short, found this dune buggy for $4,000 on the west side of Phoenix that had a built 914 2.0 liter in it, and basically got them down from the $8,000 he was asking to $4,000, and yeah, sold the dune buggy the next like day that I pulled the motor for $3,000. So got the motor for $1,000. I'm pretty happy about it, and it bolted right up. You know, really haven't had to do too much to it. The biggest thing now that I'm trying to find is and I think honestly I'm gonna have to fabricate one up, which will be fun. Oh, by the way, I started welding. That's a lot of fun. Had to weld my exhaust. Had surprisingly enjoyed it. I used to weld a lot like 15 years ago, and I do really enjoy the process. It's really fun, and I don't know, it's cool, but. I need a new engine mount, because basically anytime I give it to gas, like it you can feel it flopping around like enough to where it unsettles the back end of the car.
Is it still held in with all thread, or did you switch the motor mount perspective?
Oh, it's still held in by all thread.
All thread, baby.
I helped him put it in.
Yeah, it's really surprising how much torqueier that new motor is compared to the old one, because you didn't notice that with the old one. Let me tell you what. it's all over the place. It's crazy. But like the dual cars, when you give it, like you have to roll into the throttle because otherwise the motor like gets crazy. But it sounds so good. It is. I can't wait. I'm really excited.
If you didn't know, it sounds like you're talking about your turbo. But come to find out, no, you're still talking about a lawnmower.
Yeah. Oh, the turbo went to get paint correction and ceramic coated, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Oh, that's exciting.
I can't wait to get that back. Have to buy a new windshield for that, because I have a crack that's about 7 inches long.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, right.
Anyways, guys. Yeah, I don't think I really have too many other updates than that. I replaced the little plastic gasket, the door striker, because my passenger door stopped closing because it's 50-year-old plastic. That works again.
I wanted to share the story of your first drive in the 912 post motor swap, because I went the night before. And I helped you put the motor in, and I was like, all right, I got to go. I got an early morning. And then the next morning, you hammered it out, and you got it running. And I remember seeing on, like, Instagram briefly, like, it firing up. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then, like, I was at Nick's house. We were working on the M3. And, like, right. 2 hours later, you show up with the 912 on the trailer. You're like, hey, guys, 912 runs now. I'm like, well... Apparently listen, not.
When you're a connoisseur of cars like Andre and myself, you don't want to put too many miles on them, okay?
Yeah. You give it a nice Sunday morning half cruise, and then you tow it home.
Half mile cruise, remember, you want to start with a dead battery and make sure your charging system does not work. That way you physically cannot put too many miles on the car.
That's big brain move.
Collector. Right there.
See, all these schmucks with their incredible collections with battery tenders are idiots, because at any point they can destroy the resale value of any one of those cars.
Exactly.
Any moment.
You can't take a Pagani more than like half a mile with no battery power.
And right. More importantly, what did we learn today? Accidents ruin cars. If you can't drive it.
Write that down, folks. Write that down.
This is excellent consumer advice.
That's what we're here for, to help the people.
Hot takes. Most people probably don't think that, but
I went to try and buy a car. I don't know if that counts.
Sure. Yeah. Let's talk. Well, yeah, we're at your segment, so now it's time to argue because I know what it is and I'm ready to fight.
So okay. I'll get the cowbell to start this thing off. We can.
What'd you go try to buy?
I think it was a 2011, 2010. BMW.
Vintage.
BMW.
Oh, shocker.
Yeah. Oh. M3. And.
E90 M3. Right?
Yeah, E90 M3.
Excellent car. I think all of us like them, except Nick.
I was a little underwhelmed by it.
Wait, Nick, E90, you like them?
E90 is four-door, E92 is two-door, right?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Either of those work fine in that compatibility. I really like the E92. I think that's a great vehicle. In the E90 perspective, I will say it's good as well.
I actually really want E92, but I have two children. So
can we put a pin in something? I realized after long soul searching why I don't like coupes, but we can come back to that. That's not important. Drew almost bought an E90.
Why don't you like coupes? Hang on, this is insane knowledge here.
Ruin cars.
Well, no, I think you're aware that I don't like coupes.
Right.
That's pretty common knowledge about me.
But now there's a reason behind it because I've been asking you.
Yeah. I because they got stupid long doors that look dumb when you open them.
That and makes it so much easier to get in when you're a bigger guy.
It also makes it super easy to slam into cars when you're in a parking spot.
You park next to cars.
Proportionally, like a normal person. Stupid. I don't like it.
That is true. I see that.
I don't, but it's good.
I mean,
any car that has a four-door option looks better in the four-door option than the coupe. Apply to things like Miatas because they never came in four-door, so obviously that's the only option you get.
I
will die on this hill, and I will die fighting on this hill.
I know you will die on that hill, so I'm not even running towards the hill because I'll be on my other hill because I know you'll die that the four-door option's always better. I would venture to say no, but I do agree that some instances that the four-door option also looks good and into play.
Every time looks good.
I mean, I agree always with Andre. I like sedans more than coupes personally as well.
Like,
but
like a two-door 510 Datsun looks better than a four-door 510 Datsun. And kind of that kind of concept as you come into play. Oliver will say no because he likes his four doors, but like there's instances where, in my opinion, the four-door option isn't the better looking car, but I know there's a lot of sedan liking individuals in this group that are all about the four-door life. So I will never win in this podcast ever about that. So
the four doors? It's for the more
horse?
Cargo capacity.
It's for the horse.
It's for the horse.
I was gonna go with cargo capacity, but
all right, cool. Children.
hell, I owned technically a wagon that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, shit. this is awkward.
Nick, I do agree with you on one car that I can think of right now. That's a Hakko. The two-door Hakkos look better than
way
the
better than
the
four-door.
Four doors look stumpy.
Yeah.
What the heck is a Hakko?
It's a early Skyline.
Like, oh.
Yeah. It's like the vintage, like 60s, 70s. Yeah. The four doors, they look cool, but they don't look as cool as the coupes because they're like weirdly stubby. So I'll give you that one. But
I mean, hell, I even owned a wagon that was two doors. Technically, the square back is only two doors.
That's true. Anyway, okay. Now that we've had that argument, doesn't even the argument I wanted to have tonight. But
yes,
I won't even agree on that one. Anyway, moving on.
Really? Oh, well, all right. We'll for a future episode argue the merits of the Hakko four door.
Yes.
Drew, how was the C90? Tell us about it.
It was, BMW. They actually standard edition BMW. Get in, and
beat motorworks.
Works.
Beat Motorworks. God dang it, you need that sticker on your BMW.
Beat Works. So it sucked then.
You know, plug it in, you know, the key, because it's like a little key plug or anything that sucks. And just a dumb design. I hate that design.
The car didn't even have like comfort start. You had to put the key in.
Did they have that in 2010?
Yeah. Whoever ordered that car was poor.
Mm.
And they didn't.
I agree, because there weren't heated seats in them. Like, why do you buy this?
But it had.
Why do you add a nav? Double hump? They don't have freaking heated seats. Like, you're
the nav. The nav was like almost standard. You had to like specifically go out of your way to not get a nav. Like they just pushed that on every car.
Yeah, if somebody said, "Hey, do you want heated seats or do you want a nav?" I'd say, "Screw you, give me the heated seats." Every day of the week. But in standard BMW fashion, turn on the car. My favorite friend's there, the good old service engine Soonlight.
Like, "Hey, Drew, how's it going? Long time no see, buddy."
Did you scan it to see what it was?
No, I didn't bring my scanner. But, I guess let me get back. We get to this dealership. I had appointment for 6
o'clock. Was it a dealership? Oh, my God.
It was that dealership. And I get there. I'm like, "Hey, is Peyton here? You know, I have a appointment. I'd really like to test drive this car." They're like, "Yeah, let me see." So me and my brother-in-law, Aaron, are sitting out there for about 10 minutes. And finally, this little sketchy dude comes out. And he's like, "Hey, man, test driving this car?" I'm like, "Yeah. Yes, I am." And he's like, "All right, cool." Screws in the license plate. I'm like, "You guys just don't have like the little, you know, magnet things like every other dealer." He's like, "No, they don't want to spend the money here on that." I'm like, "All right, it's your time, I guess." And he's like, "Well, have fun." Throws keys at me. I'm like,
"Oh yeah,
well, this can work out any better."
Right.
Start up the car. I don't know if it was a cat delete or a muffler delete or exhaust delete, but the car just sounded, oh man, how do you even describe? Have you ever heard like a didgeridoo?
Did you accidentally drive a 335i instead of a M3?
I looked at the engine. It was a V8, surprisingly.
Okay.
But it was super drony. The performance was there. Something, you know, it didn't shift wrong. It drove right. Like, it did drive right. Definitely got sideways a couple times. It was fun. Like, we beat the heck out of it for a good 20 minutes.
So did the previous owner for 10 plus years.
And probably the 10 last test drives on that car.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I guess in my head I had built the car up either too much. But honestly, I think the number one problem is that it was DTC. It was.
Well, you said that wrong. It's a DCT.
Yeah, DCT. Sorry, I'm dyslexic.
Well,
legit, not pulling that card. I am. So
you were driving the right spec one. It was just beat because DCT is the one to get.
Okay, but whose metrics?
Do we want to call it? Do we just want to like end this podcast here?
Well, no, but I'm curious. By what metric is the DCT the one to get?
Well, yeah. A couple things. So it's funny this is going on because I was in LA this last weekend. My buddy Blake just bought an E90 M3 as well. He got a DCT. And prior, I've never been in a DCT car. And I rode in it. And one, I was really impressed. It had the GTS tune on it. So it really was snappy through the gears. It was very crisp and fast and responsive when he was rowing through the gears like that.
Wait, did you drive this car?
His? No, I did not. It was late.
That's why. Okay. That argument over. Well, yeah, no. Nothing to stand on. That's it.
Just shut up let me get through this. So no, like,
I mean, you don't even have a valid argument, dude. Like, this is ridiculous. Let me get
to
it.
So I was talking to another guy who was there and he was talking about specifically the development that they did on the E90 platform. And he was talking about the manual's good. It's a fun experience, but the gearing in the DCT masks a lot of the torque that the S65 doesn't have because the gearing's shorter, so it kind of rips through the gears quicker. the manuals have very long gears, so like you don't have to row it quite as much when you're sitting in traffic and stuff like that, but it really amplifies the lack of torque in them, right? I've ridden in both. I've never driven one, so yeah, fair enough. But I've ridden in both, and man, that DCT really, like, when you're ripping through the gears, it feels a lot better from what I remember on the manual one that I rode in forever ago. Well, it doesn't have that tuned, same...
So that's...
No, it just DCT. Has the trans-tune.
Yeah, that's the one that matters.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, fair, but you get the DCT with the GTS tune, and, like, seems to make sense to me. And, like, after riding in it, like... I'm a fan, and that was just from the passenger seat. And, like, if that masks the torque loss, then I'm all for it, so...
I will say the car did not feel very torquey at all, but it was fun to ring it through the gears. You don't have to have a lot of torque to have fun, but... Yeah, my biggest complaint was... Yeah, I just didn't really feel a part of the car, and hopefully by the next podcast, I will have gone out and test-driven a manual. Which I wanted to get to last weekend, but I just haven't had time. But, you know, so maybe we can restart this discussion here. But, you know, I drive Laura's Merc, and this felt like a faster, better sounding version of Laura's Merc. But
that's what it is.
At the same time, I wouldn't be like, hey, this is the car that I want to go rip canyons, and I want to be shifting myself at 8200 or whatever it is. I think it's 82 on there, but yeah.
So I guess I'll go ahead. I have a pointed question after you.
Well, what's your question?
My question is, the argument here is for DCT from Oliver's perspective, but is that a DCT with a specific tune? But if you had DCT stock with manual stock, one for one, are those the exact same to you? Or do you only believe the DCT is better after it has been tuned?
Yeah, no, of course you need the tune, right? Like the stock one, from everything that I was told, because I've never been in a stock DCT car, but everything I was told, like, it's a lot lazier. It's not quite as responsive. But the GTS tune, I believe, is from another OEM, right? Under, I don't know if you know this, but the GTS was a spec of E90, so it's just that factory tune flashed onto the car.
I personally think it really depends on what you're going to be using the car for. Like, I want the car to be like a partial grand tour car and a heavy canyon car. I mean, so the super quick snappy shifts and like torquier feel, I might feel, I don't know. To me, I just enjoy it as much in the corners myself and my driving personality. Because I like shifting. I love big. I really enjoy the process of shifting, especially in the inside. I love the engagement of it. And yeah, if I want to go stupid fast in a straight line, I have the 930 as well. So like, to me, the purpose of the car and a automatic is just not there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I
first of all, just, it's not an automatic. Doesn't... Second of all, I guess having driven both,
that's true. You had the most seat time out of anyone here.
somewhat extensively at this point. If I were buying one to own, I would look for a manual. If I was throwing the keys to one to go rip and then throw the keys back, I'd want a DCT. So, like, the allure of the DCT for me is it's, you don't have to think about it. You just get in and that bitch just ba-bop, ba-bop, ba-bop through the gears and you just go. You just put your foot down and that shit just goes.
Yeah, I will say, really,
so like,
the F80, dude, hands down, that car is
right.
Freaking awesome. Well, I was expecting that experience. Like, when I drove the F80, I was like, holy freaking crap, this thing is unbelievable. And then I drove...
Why would you be expecting that experience if you just looked at the numbers on the paper?
I didn't even look at the paper, so that might be my bad, but the F80 is an unbelievable car, except it's twin turbo and a V6 and line 6.
Well, like, it's the power that makes it fun. But I don't know. If you're just looking to like hammer it and not think about it, yeah, the DCT is an awesome option, because you don't have to You don't gotta do anything. It just it makes it violent, and it makes it, you know.
It's just it was pretty incredible. And I mean, I don't know, maybe sans tune, you know, it's miserable. I mean,
it's still pretty good without it. Like stock, it's not F80 good, but it's not bad. Sure. It's
I mean, it's years of development in between. Anyway, I was very thoroughly impressed, and the way it sort of ripped through those gears, like I feel like the shorter gearing really makes it a more dynamic car. So when you're talking about, oh, well, I want to take something to the canyons, I feel like that shorter gearing would be more beneficial for like not long stretches of road, right? The manual's geared longer.
You just keep it in a lower gear at like 6,000 RPM the whole time.
Yeah, watch your rod bearings.
Wait,
do rod bearings go out on those motors?
Yes.
It's a BMW.
It's a consumable. We're talking,
hypothetically speaking, this car is running perfectly here in this scenario.
Yeah.
I know it's far stretch, but in this scenario, the car is running perfect.
I will put my money where my mouth is, and I would buy a DCT E90. No hesitation and over the manual.
I will say that's not the wrong choice. because like if you were like, I want to buy an E92, I'd be like, that's the wrong choice. That's the uglier car. Don't do that. That's dumb. But like, I want a DCT. That's not an incorrect answer. That is just one of the answers, and that's fine. And
Me, for what that car is, because like I think M3, I think a very certain driving experience, and like, yeah, I get it, manual for sure.
None of them are the same. They're all vastly different from each
other. Well, no, I mean, they're all kind of nimble sports sedans, right? And I feel like the gearing in that and the way that it responded and the way that it handled and maneuvered felt to me just like a E36 or an E46, just, I mean, pumped full of steroids. You know, it really had that dynamic feeling. And I feel like if the torque is a little bit lazier and the gearing is a little bit lazier in the manual, yeah, sure, like, cool. But unless you're ripping on like a longer track, I don't think you'll get that same experience. And we don't have that here in Arizona with like our canyon roads. So I don't know. That's just my two cents. But I know why Drew wants the manual. I know why he wants the car. So I'm not, you know, of course, get the manual. I'm just saying, I think personally, the DCT is the one to get.
Well, as I said to you, let me drive the manual and we'll get back to you on this. We'll get back to this conversation. But in my head, I really built up this car, and I don't know. I think that was not a car problem, absolutely. Absolutely. But I was just so underwhelmed by it that, you know, maybe I'm attributing that to the automatic, but you know,
it's not an automatic.
I was looking at your camera dead in the eye when I said that.
It's funny. I mean, I don't know if you noticed as much while you were ripping on it, but you can feel it like engage the clutch when it like takes off.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, like,
drive an SMG car. Woo.
No. It goes, you feel it hit.
You can feel that thing burning the clutch.
Yeah. It's like, and now.
Like, yeah. As I said, it wasn't, best way to describe it, it wasn't bad. And honestly, it is the more practical device if you're driving to work, if you're going to be in traffic, if you're, you know, going to pay for your kids from the school and you have to sit in that horrible line that everybody hates and gets stuck behind. And
but that's the stuff that destroys those DCTs.
Yeah, really? I'm specifically saying it would be, put me on a canyon road.
It's not an automatic. So like it's the same as you burning the clutch in that same school line, except instead of you burning it, the car's burning it. So like,
yeah, but my leg doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, but your wallet's gonna have to do it later.
It's a BMW. It's expected.
So look, I guess I'll boil it down to this, because you're saying, well, the DCT, DCT is going to be better in those situations. And my argument is, give me a canyon road, put two E90s next to each other, and the only difference between them is one has the DCT and one has the manual. I personally think like the DCT will be more fun, but I think it'll be faster too, like significantly.
I'm not worried about the fast part. I'm more about the fun part. I mean, Porsche has this stuff down. They still make manual cars.
Dude, what 992 turbo are you taking to Tortilla Flat and ripping at 10?
That'd be amazing.
You'll fly off like $500,000.
But you'll fly off so hard you'll land on the second turn and it'll be fine.
You buy like a GT3 with the huge wing and just
that's why it's on there.
Yeah, you launch off the first turn and land at the end of the road.
The key is like mid glide to hit the launch control, so the exhaust, the pops and burbles kind of push you back up.
It's like that game where you like have to click to keep the thing at Flappy Bird.
Oh my god, it's Flappy Bird.
It's Flappy GT3.
Oh my god.
I mean, trust me, even from a financial perspective, the DTC is a better choice. You know, you have to pay a premium for manual, but
that's fair. Yeah. Anyway, all right. We'll leave it there.
It just must be that much better that you pay that much more.
No, it's much more because idiots like us are like, oh my god, man, you're so much better. I need it. And so like,
yeah, you're just paying a premium for a fantasy that's not there. So that's on you, man. All right, I'll leave it there. I can see I'm outnumbered, but I'll die on this hill. Like, fuck you, DCT school.
I'm not even arguing with you.
I'm not even
arguing against you.
I had one question. It was just if you put side by side. Yeah, I asked one question. Is if you put stock side by side, do you think one is better than the other? I've weighed zero knowledge on this topic because
I feel your judgment. I feel your judgment because I'm abandoning the three pedal cult. But
no, so the E90 is probably the one car that I could think of. Maybe it's because I've driven. That's the one car I've driven with both that I would. But I would be okay with either one, with either option.
I just have more questions out of this conversation than actual answers or opinions on things. So
ask your questions. I'm curious.
No, it's that's a whole nother subset. I already had to message Oliver one of them before at the beginning of this because I didn't know.
What's an F80?
What's an F80?
Well, that was my F80 I would 100% take with a DCT.
Dude, that thing's not even awesome.
Not even a question
Holy
about
crap.
It. But the E90 is like the one car where I would either one is an acceptable choice.
Yeah.
Because either one you could have a lot of fun with. Whereas like something like the F80, the manual just doesn't like the car will outdrive the manual. Whereas like the DCT lets you use the whole car because it just does the math for you. You don't have to.
Yes.
But in the E90, either one's going to be a great time.
Dude, that.
Sometimes maybe good. Sometimes
maybe shit.
It's a shame that those things are so much money because I keep looking at them like, dude, this car was. That was my most memorable test drive at a dealership. I would say, just driving the F80.
They're depreciating. Yeah. No one wants them yet.
Nothing's depreciating yet.
Yeah.
Right now. Well, you know, they don't have the same draw as the E90s do right now. So
they're still like 15 grand more, 15 to 25,000 more.
They must be $15,000 better.
Aren't they in like the 50s?
They are.
Are they?
I mean, you should drive one, Oliver. That's not bad. You should drive one. Oh, they are.
F80?
Yeah,
I've ridden an F80s. Yeah, I've been sideways in an F80.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went at SEMA. They had a drift course there.
Oh yeah, I did that.
And they
that was
put
a lot
they
fun.
Put people like four people deep in the back of an F80 and slide it around. That thing rips.
Oh, yeah. I did that. That was
sounds like garbage though. It sounds like garbage.
You just don't roll the windows down and the
never
little
put an exhaust
sound.
On it.
Well, the active sound inside the car makes it sound okay.
It makes it sound like an E90. It's all just E90 like piped in.
The fake noises make it sound okay.
We just recorded E90s for like, you know, a couple different months and we put that over it.
Hear it on there. People love it. They're happy.
All right. Well, best of luck finding one. Shall I get to my updates? Because I got a lot of them, and we're deep into this episode.
Letter rip, Tater Chip.
All right. I ruined the M3 pretty thoroughly. I absolutely ruined that car.
Watching it.
This is how I'm starting. I absolutely ruined that car. And Nick can confirm, because he has since ridden in it, that boy, is that bitch stiff.
I'll let you go to the description and then I'll give my passenger hot take on it.
So there's new suspension on the M3. I now have H&R NR-RS coilovers. For those listening who are like, oh, I have an E36 and I have never heard of that suspension, there's a good reason for that. It's a German market only that's only sold to or through specific vendors, and basically you have to be affiliated with H&R to get your hands on it easily, especially in the States. It's just not sold here. They don't ship it out. But I happen to get this suspension through Mike Burrows over at Stanceworks. So story goes, and Nick was there, he might remember, when I bought my M3, I actually went to the Stanceworks, then Proto Machine shop, and I bought it from Riley Stair because he was operating out of that space too. And Mike was there. And when I bought the car, Mike told me, he's like, hey, you want to buy some really expensive suspension? And at the time, like, you know, I had just bought the car. I wasn't sure, you know, what I wanted, what I needed yet. And I passed on. I didn't even ask any further details because I heard the words really expensive. And I was like, no, I'm gonna pass, right? Probably a good call for the last 2 years, but we'll get to that. A couple weeks ago, I'm on Instagram, as I am all the time, and Mike posts a story, and he's selling a bunch of stuff out of the shop, right? Just sort of clearing different parts he doesn't need. And he posts this photo of an H&R box, and he's like, E36 H&R Nürburgring spec suspension, real race car shit, DM me an offer, or something like that. And I was like, that's got to be the same suspension, because it was ordered for Riley's car. They got two sets, one for Mike's E36 and one for now mine, but Riley's at the time, E36. Got to be the same suspension. So I think I sent it to like Nick and Andre and a couple friends. And I was like, hey, look, the suspension's for sale. And then I don't know if anyone else does this, but I like set down my phone. And then that little voice in the back of your head goes, you should message about it. I was like, no, I don't. I have coilovers. I don't need other coilovers. That's stupid. And like, it just kind of kept chewing at the back of my head. And I think I talked to Andre a couple times, and he's like, yeah, that's stupid. You don't need it. Don't buy that. And then I messaged Mike. I was like, hey, just out of curiosity, is this suspension that was supposed to go onto Riley's car? And he's like, oh yeah. How'd you know that? I'm like, well, I'm the guy that bought Riley's car. And he's like, oh shit. And he's like, yeah, that's it. And I was like, what's the deal with this? Like, why is it so expensive? What's so special about it? Long story short is, essentially, it's like all aluminum body, so they're really lightweight. They weigh almost nothing for coilovers. The rear has some trick stuff to sort of like, it's essentially helper springs, but in the rear, since it's not a coil over, it's a divorce setup. It's kind of a trick little spring jack setup to keep everything in place so it doesn't come out. Because on the Nürburgring, you jump your car and your springs can come unseated. So it's got like stuff in the rear to keep everything seated. And the spring rates are insane. They're like, I don't actually know the numbers, but I would not be surprised if they're like 30K springs. It feels like that. They're valved appropriately, but holy shit, are they stiff. And they're on my car now. And Nick, I don't know, what do you think?
This suspension, the level of stiffness that's on this car, I've never seen anybody aim at a dip in a road and go fucking send it, because it doesn't matter, because you're going to grip and you're going to feel it. You can try to go slow, but it's better faster than slow. Mm-hmm. And it is just, you hit, you know, like you, yeah. Everything is like, yep, we're tight. But the real cool part, though, that you could immediately tell was just leaving the neighborhood and going around the corner. You could kind of feel the whole car just stick and plant even just for that. So that was like really cool about it. But that, it's how I would do, how you kind of described it makes sense a little bit. It's like, imagine Racelands, like, yeah. but an expensive version of a similar level of stiffness.
It's 100% accurate. Imagine the just general around town ride quality of like a set of blown out Racelands. But when you hit a pothole, the car doesn't become unsettled. It's like, it's the strangest thing because like I've had cheap suspension like back in college and stuff like that. Where like you're driving around and like you hit a pothole and the whole car like feels like it's now unsettled. This thing, it does not care. It doesn't budge an inch, but like it, all the tires stay on the ground. It like, it does its thing. It sends all of that energy straight to your spine, but it stays on the ground, you know, like it's working. So it's cool. And like, it was kind of a cool story installing it. So I actually went out to the Stance Workshop. In Costa Mesa, California. So thank you to Mike, for his hospitality and having me there. That was a blast. I pretty much grew up on like Stancework stuff. I followed all of his cars and his site over the years. So it was really cool being there and working on my car there. Like we visited several times and like I bought my car there, but like actually being in that shop for a substantial time and like having my car up on the lift, that was pretty rad. I'm going to fangirl a little. But yeah, met some great guys there. I didn't turn a single wrench on my car, which was kind of a blessing in disguise. I drove out Friday morning to California and I got there and, probably like 11, 12. And, he shot me a text. He's like, well, hey, if you're already here, why don't you come by the shop now? We'll just hammer out the install today. I was like, okay. So after driving to California in the morning, I went straight to the shop and, we got it installed. So yeah, I mean, effectively it's ruined it as like a compliant street car, but man, it's got some badass suspension underneath it. So I feel obligated to track it.
And then how do you think it would do on tortilla flats?
It wouldn't. That road is so torn.
How
up.
Do you think it would do on tortilla flats, but with a DCT?
It would rule. That would fix everything. I don't know. I'll take it as a tortilla. I think it'll be fine.
It'd be rough super on badass on that. Now, I would say, though, like, that's not just a little bit. Like, you got to kind of get into, like, the coolness, like, the parts and everything.
Yeah. Like. So here's my favorite story of the entire weekend. Of course, this is, like, you know, expensive coilovers are kind of like buying a Porsche. The more you pay, the less shit that they give you. So, you know, like you get whatever BCs, Fortunatos, they give you the camber plates with the suspension, you know, everything comes in it. These H&Rs, they retail for like, you know, if you were to go to H&R and buy them, they're like $4,500. And they don't come with camber plates like at all. That's not a thing that they give you. You have to supply your own camber plates. It's kind of difficult, but yeah, Drew.
I mean, how old are these coilovers? Because, you know, all the coilovers as the boomer in the group that I ever purchased did not come with, you know, top hats or camber plates. And I guess I never bought Racelands either. But I mean, like Tanes and KWs, well, everything like that.
Because you were buying them for Hondas that don't use camber plates. They use camber arms.
Yeah, dummy.
Like a Miata doesn't use camber plates, it uses camber bolts to adjust.
Is this everything. Over? All right, yeah. See you guys later. Adios.
I just.
No, the fronts in Hondas do use camber plates. In the rears, that's normally where you have to get the camber bars.
Yeah. But. I mean, it's granted older sets do, but these days.
Even like zero top hats and nothing like that. So.
Yeah.
If they're like 6-7 years old, I don't know how old they are. That's why I was asking.
Okay. No, they're not. The coils themselves are brand new. They've been on the shelf for, I guess, since I bought the car. So 2 years. But this is just, it's a pretty common thing. Like companies like Moton, ATS, I think it's ATS, man. I always get that wrong. ACS, something like that. A few of these really expensive companies, this is the same deal. They just straight up do not, you know, it's $4,000 for the coilovers and you supply your own camber plates. That's a you problem. Because some of these guys who are running them with this $4,000 suspension for whatever spec series that they're running aren't allowed to run camber plates. They have to use the stock strut tops. So They're like, you figure that out. We're going to put all the engineering into the coilover. You deal with the rest. So I think that's why those really expensive ones are like that, because they're for guys who are running specific series and they know what they need. So
my next question is, when you go to Tucson, why are you not taking that car?
To the autocross?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, good question. Kind of jumping ahead. But sorry. Because the M3, the way that's modified, my class would be the same class as the Miatas that have the windshields cut off to be more competitive.
Yeah, but you're not, but you would be going for fun, not to actually.
Yeah, that's fine. But like, I mean, it's to me, one, I just got the S2000 and it's what I wanted to do with it. And two, it's a little bit more fun if you go in knowing that you're not going to be immediately crapped on by everyone else in your class. Like, you might have a chance, you know, the M3s. Yeah. I would like to not be last again. I've done that before. Yeah, I've gone to an autocross and been dead last, so I would like to not do that again. Not that I'm trying to win, but let's not set myself up for failure.
I wish I had something to go down there. It'd be like the Raptor at this point would make it down there.
You think the 930? Why not?
930 is not here.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Indie deal.
I could drive the 912 and have it blow up.
Trailer the 912.
Show up with a trailer. Looking all serious.
Actually, at this point, too, there's a good chance the motor would just rotate off the car. So,
dude, I'm just imagining that in tech inspection of just looking at the rear going, is that a fuel pump or whatever? Zip tie to the side here? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Those all right, you pass.
I didn't know this was Speed World.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason too. I just got the S2000 and it's kind of like, I feel like I would have fun with it there. I don't know. We'll get into the S2000 later because that's a whole separate story. But yeah, I mean, this is more like long track, like road course stuff. Tight autocross, I don't think is where the M3 really shines.
All right. So, I guess we got to buy membership to Thermal now.
Oh, yeah, perfect. Or Apex here in Phoenix. Same cost.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting we have one here in Phoenix.
Yeah. We have our own thermal. We don't need to go out there.
Yeah. You have to run that. I think it's like 92 or 94 dBs, though. Anything over that?
No, that's Arizona Motorsports Park. Apex is
you're right. You're right. Club.
Membership starts at 50 grand a year to be allowed to use the Apex track. So
where is that track?
I don't know. No Started idea.
Derail. I was just, I keep forgetting we have one. I don't even know where it's at.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, if we came up with the alias and we all chipped in, we still wouldn't have enough to get a membership for 1 year.
It's true.
That's true. If all of us chipped in,
I mean, like we could figure it out, but do we really? I mean, between the four of us, do we want to spend 50 grand?
And then we would all just end up taking the M3.
Yeah, we all show up. Don't worry, it won't rub.
It won't rub. Nothing will make that rub.
It was funny when we put the suspension on the car. Mike and Khalil, who did all the installation on the car, they were like, because I told them I was worried about driving back home. Like, I didn't want it to be too low that I specifically raised it back up. I have shit in the trunk. I had tools. I had, you know, extra parts, stuff like that. And I was like, guys, I want to make sure that it, like, sits at an okay height. And they're like, you could, like, drive it on the frame rails and it wouldn't matter. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I hadn't driven at that point. And I was like, yeah, I'm really concerned. Like, I don't want to, you know, LA freeways are awful. I really, you know, I'm just worried about it. And I think they kind of like, they're being nice to me. And they're like, okay, whatever. And they raised it up a little bit. But as it turns out, they were 1,000% right, because I was lower than I was when I drove out to LA with more weight in the car returning home, and it rubbed less. So I was lower and heavier and rubbing less. So that's, that should give you an idea how stiff it is. But I want to share, and this is kind of the coolest story with the camber plates and why I brought them up. The reason I mention all of that is I bought camber plates through a company called Vorschlag. And that was a process in itself. Like, I had to send them measurements because, like, no one's ever heard of these coilovers. No one has any idea. When I asked them, like, hey, what do you recommend for this? They're like, why would we ever know that? Like, you need to measure X, Y, and Z and send us these dimensions. So sent it out to them. They're like, okay, we recommend this. I ordered that option. I got overnight shipping unnecessarily because I was like worried that they wouldn't show up. I get to Mike's shop out in Costa Mesa, and he's like, well, let's check those camera plates first, like before we do anything else, because if these don't work, like we may not be able to install them. Go to put it all together. Come to find out there's this like nut at the top that threads onto the strut itself, but it also has like a sleeve on it. Vorschlag makes this part as a sleeve that like centers the entire assembly, because it's like three or four different pieces, and it like goes through this, and it has threads cut all the way through, and then a nut at the top. It's actually kind of a complicated piece, right? We put everything on. He goes to put the nut on, and it's like you drop it on and like it falls on. It's so much bigger than the threads. And so we're like, well, shit, you can't just put a nut on there because you need to center the whole assembly. And like, where are you going to get this part? It's such a like actual intricate little piece. You can't just go to Ace Hardware and buy that. That doesn't exist. It's like made of stainless. It's like, and I was like, I thought that was it. I thought, okay, well, that's it. I'm going to put the suspension in the box in the back of the car and drive back home, you know, with nothing installed on the car. And he's like, hang on. He hops in his truck. He takes like the strut and one of those nuts. He hops in his truck, drives down the road, comes back, and he's like, all right, I dropped it off with Brent. And I was like, who's Brent? It's a machine shop down the road. A buddy of his has this machine shop. And basically, he walked in while they were having lunch and said, hey, I need this piece made the same dimensions externally, but with threads to fit this cut through. And they're like, okay, when do you need it by? He's like, next couple hours. And they're like, okay. And then he left. A couple hours later, he gets a text message. Part's ready. Goes back over there, picks it up. Fits perfect. And you got to keep in mind, they didn't modify the original piece. They remachined this entire intricate little like sleeved nut from scratch out of stainless in like an hour by hand. No CAD, nothing like that. He just eyeballed the whole thing, made it.
You have pictures of this?
Yeah, I can drop it in our group chat.
Yeah, please do. Put this on Instagram too, so everybody knows.
It is, I think now, those strut top nuts are like my favorite part of the car. And I dropped the picture in the chat. For those of you listening, I'll try to put a photo on Instagram or something, just so you see the example.
So is the inside diameter or the outer diameter too?
The inside diameter was way too large, which is a problem, because if it was too small, we could have just drilled it out and recut the threads. But if it's too big, you can't shrink it down, right? So when I arrived there, those pieces did not exist. They were 100% created from scratch. It was so cool. And it was like, it blew my mind. It was so cool. And it's like, stuff like that is how you end up building cars like Mike does. He's like building that K-Swap for Ferrari right now, right? And having those connections and being able to just, okay, I need X, Y, and Z. I'm going to go pick it up, you know? And knowing the people to make that happen, it's just wild to see.
It's so cool.
So yeah, that was I think my favorite story from the whole install process. But
you also sold your suspension immediately too, though. Like,
yeah. So I did not return home with the Fortunatos that were on my car. While we're sitting there, I'm talking to this guy, and he's like, "Hey, I think my friend would really like them for the car M3. This is like a convertible." I was like, okay, well, I'm selling them. I was going to take them home and sell them. I had like a tentative buyer already. He's like, well, what do you want for him? So we kind of like shoot some numbers back and forth. He's like, let me talk to him. Comes back. He gives me a number that I'm happy with. The guy Venmos his friend, and then his friend who's there at the shop Venmos me. And I've been paid for the suspension that's coming off my car. So now I don't even have to go back home with it. It's sold, right? Later that evening, Richie, the guy who bought my suspension, Richie comes to the shop. And he, Khalil, and Jeremy, these three guys, install it on his Dakar same night while I'm there in an hour, like in an hour flat. And I rode in that car later. So my suspension went off and then on to another M3 that same day. It was so much fun.
It's absolutely wild. Like, all the M3s were going down.
Yeah, the next day, Mike texted me a photo, a third M3 was getting coilovers in the shop. And he's not like a public shop. I think it's worth noting for those who don't know Mike Burrows, Stanceworks is not a publicly, like, this isn't someone you can go pay to have work on your car. It's his personal shop. So like It just so happened to be a super E36 heavy weekend. All coilovers.
So E36, suspension went off, suspension went on. You did that. Mm-hmm. So this was done early, though. So this was done on Friday. You thought you were going to do it Saturday. So then what went down on Saturday?
So originally, I was scheduled to be at Mike's shop on Saturday, which just freed up the entire day on Saturday for me. So texted a buddy of mine, Shane, who lives out in L.A. He has an E36 coupe. I saw him when he was out in Phoenix here a few months ago. I said, hey, you know, if you're free, let's go to like the canyons or something like that. So on the suspension that I just installed, I ended up ripping the Malibu canyons like hours on end. And here's the thing, in the past when like we have gone to the Malibu canyons, like we'll hit up like one or two roads and be like, okay, we had our fun, we time to go home, right? Like this was just like 2 hours straight of just like road after road. I had no idea where we were after a while, because like we got so deep into it. There are like full-blown towns in the middle of the Malibu canyons that I had no idea about, with like one lane bridges and like log cabins, and it was just ripping these roads nonstop. And here's the thing, we went on some of the bigger ones when like we all went to the Malibu canyons. There are some sketchy roads in the back of that mountain range, to the point where like it's a two-lane road technically, but man, is it not wide enough for two cars. Like the landslides kind of like encroach on the actual asphalt, and then like the outer lane is just a sheer cliff with no railing or anything like that. And like you gotta really take it easy in this, like hairpin after hairpin after hairpin after like elevation change. All of it's incredible. These roads are incredible.
I'm pretty jealous. I'm not going to lie. That sounds amazing.
It was a blast. I wasn't having as much fun as I could be because my alignment is hilariously bad.
But... I thought it was because it wasn't a DTC, but...
Right, or a DCP.
But no, that sounds like you just pretty much had the most epic car weekend.
Yeah, you know. It was pretty fantastic, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, so we were out there like for the afternoon, and... I would have hung out longer, but I already had like mentally prepared like to wake up at 4 in the morning to drive back home for Sunday. So it started getting later, and Malibu was like 50 miles away from where I was staying, my hotel. So like that day on Saturday, I put 200 miles on that new suspension, like just out the gate. And that's through like LA roads and traffic. And like, let me tell you, those freeways, you think they're bad when you're like in your plush Lexus or your Mercedes or something, but like when you have 30k springs welded to your spine, that's some next level bad.
Pretty sure you were probably bunny hopping it off of the dips.
Yeah, I mean it just kind of board slides everywhere. So and my alignment was really, really garbage at that point. Nick and I measured my front camber today and it was -6.5, so
Yeah,
you know, not the best for handling, but I still made the best of it. We had a good time. So, and then Sunday I drove back. Car didn't skip a beat. I kind of glossed over the fact that like Nick and I did some maintenance before I went out there. Flushed the cooling system pretty heavily. Installed a new fan, kind of nut and bolted the car. But oh, and put a new exhaust on that was a lot quieter. So
oh yeah, how was the exhaust on that trip?
Good. Way more tolerable, like, than the UUC ever would have been. It's still a little bit boomy, though, under very specific conditions. Like, if you really load up the car in, like, a higher RPM, it can kind of get annoying after a while. But that's a very small window, so I'll take it. I'm happy with it.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was my M3 weekend. That just happened. I'm like still kind of recovering from the fact that all happened. Like it was to me pretty wild. Had a blast. Saw the Ferrari in person. The thing is,
I was gonna say those pictures with your car on the lift next to the Ferrari is pretty dope.
Right. Yeah. That's like
that's one of my favorite photos of your car. Like,
appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm never gonna be able to do that again. So.
Right.
It was definitely like a once in a lifetime sort of deal.
Never say never, man. Maybe next time we'll be at Jay Leno's.
Yeah, right. Maybe if he wants to buy my MP.
Yeah.
I would like to see his garage someday, but Yeah, you know, it was a good time. It was I was super worried about the M3 not making it, but it survived, no problem. And I had blast of a weekend. Definitely objectively ruined the M3, but let's not worry about that.
It's race car shit now, which is awesome. But now, now it's the cool part though, because you were always on this fence of like, well, do I do this or do I do this? Like you were like, I go comfort or I go here. And now that you've made it race car, you're like, fucking send it.
There's zero reason to keep any comfort. Yeah.
Hey, so that's the true test now. Third date, that's the car you pick him up in.
Right. Nick and I were literally talking about this. Like this car has to be hidden. This cannot be a first date sort of car.
First date, no. Terrifying. Second date, no. Third date, things are going well. That's where you find out.
That's when you show them you're a psychopath. That's yeah.
No, but I mean, like, if they're cool with that, then you know you're good after, you know.
It's remind me, Drew, this week to drop by your house at some point and give you a ride along in the M3.
I'll give you a ride in the 912 too. It will be fun.
Perfect. We'll swap shitbox stories. So yeah, that's my M3 weekend. Pretty huge update. I mean, that suspension by itself.
Oh, that's huge. That's really awesome, huge. Man.
Yeah. And it's motivated me too. Like I kind of felt down about the M3 for quite a while. I think I told Nick a lot about this, but like, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing next. But like after doing all that and like just driving the car for 1,000 miles over the weekend, I was like, I want to rip into this. I want to fix everything that's wrong. I want to make this thing exactly how I want it. So I feel like kind of energized on the car again, which is what I needed.
No, it's super exciting. And to see like that energy come in, to, like the next steps and the progress coming into it. Like I'm freaking stoked about what's coming next. Like,
some cool stuff awesome. If I can pull it off.
What's next?
S65 with a DCT swap.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Caged, gutted, drifted.
No drifting, but maybe a roll bar at this point.
What's this, those are pull it?
I'll tell you guys later. No need to bore the audience with the specifics of what I'm doing to the car next right now, but a lot of deferred maintenance, fixing some things that I did wrong in my opinion. Yeah, we'll go through it later. Can I close out on the S2000?
Hell yeah, you can.
So Drew mentioned briefly that I did register for an autocross this upcoming weekend, and I really hope I make it. We'll see. The master cylinder is in the process of failing. It's leaking all over the interior.
If you want to bring that over, man, I can help you out with that. It sucks.
I already have paid someone to like take care of it. I'm just waiting on the parts to arrive. Yeah, I literally, with work and being out on Friday because I took vacation day, I don't have the time to deal with it myself this week. So I'm dropping it off with someone. They're taking care of it.
Next time you're waiting for parts too, check with Honda on Giller Road. They actually carried a surprising amount of parts still.
Yeah, I mean, these are coming from a dealership. So, but he went through his because he has like a vendor account.
Gotcha.
So. Yeah, but like, so it's getting a new master cylinder and that'll take care of that. But then I'm going to an autocross, which should be pretty fun down in Tucson. I will say that riding along in that M3 kind of spoiled the S2000 for me. Like I went into that weekend, good. Like the S2000 is sick. I love it. And then I rode in that E90 and I was like, oh man, I had a little bit of like buyer's remorse. And I was like, man, I need one of these E90s.
Good.
Whoever sold that to you is a jerk.
I still love the S2000, but I don't know. Let me do the autocross first and see how I feel. But like, I had never experienced such a weird feeling of buyer's remorse after riding that E90. I was like, man, I should just get one of these instead of fussing with the S2000. This is like so much more what I want. So. I don't know. We'll see. Nothing's set in stone, but I'll end on that note. I don't know how I feel about the S2000 right now, especially because it broke the second I came home. So
yeah, I think you're going to have a lot of fun at the autocross specifically with it. I know you've got different plans with it. I finally learned that me and Andre wholeheartedly agree on one topic. Well, two topics, three. Bees dropping phones on our stomachs, and ultimately S2000 and Mugen parts are not our style at all.
Yeah, Drew,
yeah, real ugly.
What?
You don't like the Mugen hardtop.
Oh yeah, God, those things are so trashy.
Or that god awful bumper
with the chin on the bottom that was like nah, 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 nah.
So you know, all seven people that listen to this will be super upset when I say this, but when I see like a Mugen, because they're all replica hardtops. They're all like $1,200. They're all carbon fiber. They're all unfinished. They're no headliner. To me, like, I see that, I'm like, your car looks like a cheap piece of crap. But part of that might be because, you know, it's exactly what it is. It's that people don't want to spend the money and do it right. And so they cut corners and they buy the cheapest thing they can for a hardtop. And then it either, you know, it's sun faded or the carbon fiber gets destroyed. You know, it is what it is. So why I look at that.
No. When you look at it, you don't like it. I get it. Yeah.
It reminds me of like someone like that cuts corners, unless you're buying the legit, like real hard top, but those are $4,000. And so at that point, might as well just buy OEM because it's that much better.
Well, but like, I don't know. That's what I was suggesting, buying the actual authentic Mugen, because Mugen, I think it's pronounced Mugen. It's $3,700. It's the authentic part. It fits well. Allegedly, it fits better than OEM in terms of sealing and road noise, because of the way it was like shaped. I was gonna color match it. Like, I was gonna make it nice. Even do like a headliner inside and make like the whole thing really nice. Like, I do things right. I'm not gonna get the cheap replica part. I'm pretty opposed to that. The problem is OEM hardtops are going for like $6,000-$7,000 right now, and I'm like, to me, there's no value in that. Like, I'll just run no hardtop before I spend $7,000 on an OE aluminum, whatever. You know, that's not worth it.
I will say, if I were to ever get one of those cars again, there's no way I could not run it without a OE hardtop. I just couldn't do it.
I mean, just tack $6,000-$7,000 on top of the price, you know. And to me,
I'll probably never own another S2000. Well, I'll own another S2000, but I'll never own a S2000.
Yeah. I'll sell you the Suzuka Blue. $17,000 right now, all yours.
Dude, you will get that all day too. That's the crazy part. This market's nuts.
Yeah, probably. But we're not selling it right now. I got some things I want to do to it first. I want to have my fun with it. I want to experience it. But I think, unfortunately, experiencing the E90 has put a very short lifespan on the S2000. So we'll see.
It's gone from TBD. It's gone from build out to hot boy summer, and then on to the E90.
Pretty much, yeah. So
sell it while it's hot. Sell it tomorrow.
Oh no, man. I don't know if the E90 is that much better unless it's really what you want, like a bigger sedan. Like, there is something really nice about the size of the S2000 when you're trying to drive it. Andre's losing his mind over there, but like when you're ripping it and going through canyons and everything, like, it is a very specific feel and is very driver centric, where the E90 has the exact same buttons, interior and everything like that as a 325i. So,
but you're not in a 325i. You're in an M3.
Yeah, and but it's bigger. It's heavier. It's bigger, heavier.
Got a V8.
It does have a V8.
Literally, any point you could make about an S2000, it doesn't have a V8. So. It loses.
I smoked a lot of E90s without trying on 3 pounds of boost.
Right. You also had a massive fuel leak that almost burned your car down in a gas station. And the other endless list of problems that your car never ran right the entire time it was turboed? That's right. That's the one, right? Yeah. Also, didn't you blow up second gear? Didn't you do that? Didn't you do that?
That was called party mode.
And you couldn't shift? Is that right? Yeah.
It wouldn't be a problem if you had a DCT.
That's true.
You know, when you go after Andre, he always says he hates BMWs, but look how defensive he gets.
He knows it's a good. He knows that's one of the good ones.
No, it's a good car.
I will
they're
say,
just they're different feeling cars. Yeah. Go ahead, Nick. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. I was going to say you did drive it in the canyons, and you did love the S2000 in the canyons.
I did. I stand by that. It was fantastic. It really was. It's a good car. I'm not going to take anything away from that. But it's like, you know, the Jeremy Clarkson meme. This is brilliant.
But I love this. Yeah,
that's
and that's
what's
well, and so, it makes sense. It makes sense for you, 100%. You're always going to trickle back to everything BMW.
Yeah, it's unfortunately as hard as I try, I feel like it's now like in my DNA or something. But regardless, I am going to commit to what I was going to do. I'm going to run the events that I want to run the S2000. I'm going to have the fun that I wanted to have in it. But you know, when I first got it, I was like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm going to keep this longer term. And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I am going to commit to exactly what I said I was going to do with it first. And then we'll see how I feel after that. But with the way the E90 market is going to right now, well, the autocross is Sunday, Andre, at least give me till Sunday.
I will say Monday. If it was a choice between the S2000 right now and the E90, I would take the E90 all day.
Was literally what you did since you sold me the S2000 and you're trying to buy an E90. So
yeah, I also lived with the S2000 for like 7 years.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
so last we'll see. I also with the turbo
sounds like 7 wasted years if you ask me.
Hey, how's that Jetta driving? Both of them.
Well, one's a brand new car, so it drives okay. The other one, I'm not sure. I've only driven it once.
Yeah, so we'll see how it all goes. Plus, I have some pretty big M3 plans now, E36 M3 plans, so I also kind of have to be conscious of like where I'm spending my time
on my money. Yeah,
so because the M3 is about to probably get torn down pretty thoroughly to correct some issues and do away with M50s, so... We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
You should put that M50 whatever in the S2000.
The S52. Oh man. Maybe then it will finally have some fucking torque.
Yeah, buddy. I will say, like, when I got back in the S2000, I was like, oh, like, where's all the power? Oh, here it is. Found it. Found it right around 7,000.
It's like economy car. Oh, we're at 7,000. And oh, hey, sports car.
Yeah. For sure. You have to drive it like you hate it.
Yeah, it really punishes you if you don't. But
yeah,
let's call it there. It's been a long episode, but we covered a lot. I had a blast this last weekend, so I feel like I win the updates. I'm going to call it.
Yeah, you do. 100,000% you do, man.
Absolutely not. I recharged the AC in the Raptor. Dude, best ever. Yeah, you win.
Definitely win.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and be sure to follow our podcast on all the networks that you listen to, whether it be Apple, Spotify, Google Music, whatever. Just be sure to hit that follow button so you get the latest episodes. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Don't forget to drink water.